Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to the Concierge Coaches Show with Bruce Cameron and Justin Nimmergood, only on LA Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to another exciting episode of the Concierge Coaches Show here on LA Talk Radio. I'm Bruce Cameron, and Justin is out on assignment this week and more than likely next week, doing some exciting travel and business and executive and company coaching and peak performance. And we look forward to having him back here and telling us, giving us an update on his movements there. So, but today, you know, we have again with us special guest and my co-partner in crime, no pun intended, with the federal prison authority. We have Mr. Jose Santana. Jose, welcome.
Good afternoon, Bruce. How are you?
Doing well, doing well. Boy, just so much going on out there in the world of federal prison. We have today, as a matter of fact, this morning, was it Michael Cohen self-surrendered to Otisville camp? And he gave a little statement before he on his way to self-surrender. Did you happen to hear that this morning, or did you have you caught that on the news?
No, I sure did. I actually, as of last night, late last night, they were talking about him coming to going to surrender, voluntary surrender to Otisville camp. So this morning, you know, thinking about the first step back and how it applies to Michael Cohen, it applies to him also, you know. So
exactly.
So it was, all this is in the news. And Bruce, you know, we've been flooded and inundated with questions and calls about the First Step Act.
We have been. And that's good. A lot of people have a lot of questions. And, you know, and we're going to go over some of that today. We're going to go over some pretty specific things. This podcast is going to be on iTunes. But it's also going to be put up on the First Step Act Facebook page. We may make a YouTube entry on it, but this will definitely be on the First Step Act and Federal Prison Authority Facebook pages for you to follow. So I guess, you know, in December of 2018, President Trump signed into law something called the First Step Act, and this is an attempt, one of the first attempts to address prison reform, and it applies to federal offenders. Now, I know that some states are doing some of their own versions of this, but this is not what we're talking about. We're not talking about state prisons. We're talking about federal prisons, and so we're going to talk about the Federal Bureau of Prisons specifically, and how the First Step Act that was signed into to federal as a federal program, how that applies, and where we are with that right now. So I, you know, and again, and Jose, I know you'd agree, this is a great thing, and the Bureau of Prisons is really doing a good job of ramping this up. I know there was a government shutdown, but they've ramped it up. We have an operation memorandum, and we're starting to see elderly offenders now, a good bit of elderly offenders be released from custody into home confinement settings, and that's good that the BOP really didn't drag their feet and they're executing on this in a timely manner.
Absolutely, Bruce, and the Bureau of Prison has been proactive. Actually, as of April 4 of this year, April 4, 2019, they had already established and put up in their in their policy, BOP.gov website, the operations memorandum of home confinement under the First Step Act. You know, so the Bureau has already established that operations memorandum to deal with the requirements that the First Step Act places on the BOP and the agency as a whole, you know, for that purpose, for home confinement under the First Step Act.
Okay. So I guess maybe we can start our discussion with the easier aspects of this. The compassionate release. Now, compassionate release isn't easy by any means, but it is something that the BOP is addressing in a very timely manner now. And so there are certain things that an offender needs to meet, certain qualifications an offender needs to meet in order to be considered for compassionate release. And, you know, and let's talk about those things. First of all, you have to be age 65 or older, and the inmate has to suffer from a chronic or serious medical condition that is related. It helps if the medical condition is related to the aging process, okay? Also, if the inmate is experiencing a deteriorating mental or physical health that can diminish their ability to do their time in a correctional facility. I remember working in several medical centers myself where, gosh, you'd have all these lower bed restriction, no allergy, no wool blanket, no standing. Remember those inmates, Jose? They had every kind of restriction.
Wool restriction. Lower bunk restrictions.
Lower bunk, you know, and they're just in sick call every day, and they can't work, and they just, man, you know, they're just, and they're just burning up the taxpayers' money with health concerns and health issues and those things. And so, obviously, people whose care level, would necessitate that kind of level of attention, the BOP needs to take a look at. One of the prongs talks about that conventional treatment promises no substantial improvement to their physical condition or mental condition. So this can be two things, it could be mental and or physical. So I do like that they kind of break out the mental health component out separately with this. And and so that is a good thing, because there are people with chronic mental conditions that may require, they can just do better off in a controlled environment in the community and not necessarily in a federal prison. And lastly, the inmate must have served at least 50% of their sentence. So there you have it. We're getting calls, people that are just now being, indicted and awaiting sentencing. They're already packing their bags to go home, and they haven't even done a day of their time. So again, with these, even with compassionate release, you have to have done 50% of your sentence.
Right.
So, all right. So, but there's more to this story though, right? Because folks go ahead.
No, go ahead, Bruce.
I was going to say, when this is where our assistance is necessary, because, some attorneys may be able to articulate this right, but inmates filling out, going through the administrative remedy or trying to seek relief, need to understand that the BOP is going to look at several other factors, such as the age at which the inmate committed their current offense and whether this medical condition was present at the time of the offense, and whether the inmate was suffering this condition at the time of the PSR was written. Okay. So that's not necessarily one of the criteria as mentioned above as a condition related to aging. Okay. You know what I'm saying? That's not that, it's really interesting that the aging process needs to be clearly shown as exacerbating the medical condition here. So,
yes.
It's very, very interesting things. And the BOP, man, they take a close look. I remember, Jose, when you and I were both making decisions like this, right? We looked at everything.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a comprehensive review of the factors that should be considered. And actually, in the operations memorandum, There is a list of the factors to evaluate the circumstances of the for the compassionate release or for the home detention. Because Bruce, you know, as we speak about the First Step Act, the First Step Act contained certain additional requirements for the Bureau of Prisons as an agency for placing inmates in home confinement or granting early release under reduction of sentences for you know compassionate release or terminally ill or elderly inmates to be placed either in home confinement or to be released, you know, because this is two components, Bruce. Under compassionate release, the inmate will be released. He won't go under home confinement. He could go under home confinement, but most of the time, compassionate release means the inmate is released from custody as time served. Under home confinement, the inmate will serve the sentence, but under home arrest, electronic monitoring, which, as we know it. So there's certain different things and certain different jargons that we need to look at. And that's where we, as Federal Prison Authority, as consultants, could assist the families and the attorneys and everybody else that's going to be impacted or be working with the inmates under the First Step Act and the requirements.
Right. And it's going to, you know, right, to have a packet, you know, for the inmate, either through themselves or their attorney or their family members or hiring consultants like this, that packet needs to address all the things we've talked about. But, you know, it could even have to include, you know, obviously things about the criminal history, making sure there's no detainers, making sure there's no prior supervised release violations, making sure their institutional adjustment, you know, was good. Did they have any incident reports, you know, anything and everything that's listed in the pre-sentence report is fair game and will be considered heavily into that. Now, for those that, right, that aren't getting immediate release, you know, some may go to a residential reentry center for those that are going to home confinement. And I'll hold off on that because I think we I'm going to hold off on that. But the inmate's current age, age at the offense, and the release plan. So is there a release plan? Okay, even though this person has compassionate release, we want to see a release plan. I know I've transported inmates to nursing homes, you know, but we had to have we had social work involved, and we had a release plan for this individual to go to a nursing home, et cetera. So this person was very, very old and frail. And I actually flew this individual from a medical center to a releasing state. So, but I can assure you there was a release plan there.
And you make a good point, Bruce, on the release plan, because even they're going to be released in a compassionate release or receive a reduction in sentence to time served, the individual has to have an immediate release plan approved. That means that who's going to take care of him if he's going to a house, private home? Who's going to take care of him? Who's going to provide for his daily care, for financial support, for medical support? Who's going to pay the bill for the medical, the medicines, and everything else? So you can't forget that there is a release plan has to be approved and investigated by the U.S. Probation Office if they have a term of supervision to follow.
Right.
And also it leads to the fact that if he's going to another jurisdiction, a different jurisdiction or the one where he was sentenced, then there has to be approved by the receiving jurisdiction, the relocating jurisdiction of approval of relocation of supervision. So.
Right. Right. So now something that I'm looking at that I found pretty exciting. And I want to make sure that I get this right, folks. This is so new that, you know, I think the authors don't even understand what they wrote barely because this is so new. I mean, I think they do, but it hasn't gone into practice. So So, Jose, I was looking at the expanded home detention. Now this is a pilot program, folks. This is a time limited pilot program. But I think a lot of people, or many people, could fit through the eye of this needle. Okay, so this is a pilot program that dovetails with the Second Chance Act of 2007, but it's also driven by the First Step Act that was drafted on December 21st, 2018, when Congress, expanded this program. And what it is that, eligible federal prisoners can be placed on home detention or detention in a nursing home or other residential long-term care facility. Now, this is the one I was telling you about that I transported this inmate to, Jose. It was a nursing home. And we kind of did it old school. We didn't do it old school. I moved that person. Maybe it was old school. Anyway, it was in the 2000s, early 2000s. So anyway, okay. So let's look at this. So this is a time sensitive program that runs from fiscal year 2019 through fiscal year 2023. Okay. And so here we go, right? The clock is running. And now this program, I guess we'll call it expanded home detention. Now this program is open to offenders that are 60 years old and older, or an offender that's terminally ill. You like that, Jose? In other words, a terminally ill person could be younger than 60, right? And so what they're looking at, Jose, is nursing home criteria. I don't know if that last time you're in a nursing home, but sadly, I see a lot of young people in nursing homes these days, right? They might have had a head injury, right? Or
hospices,
some other
hospices.
True, hospice. They can be mm-hmm. near death and in a hospice care setting, but they could have endured a disability or a physical disability that rendered them nursing home eligible in their 30s or 40s or whatever. Okay, so I like that because it's open to people that are 60 and over or terminally ill. Like I said, very terminal. Now, interestingly, go ahead.
Mm-hmm. No, sorry. Go ahead.
I was going to say, if they mess this up, it says, look, if you violate the terms of the home detention, it could result, the person could return to prison. So they're serving their sentence. They're not, right? They're not getting a reduction since mm-hmm. they're serving out the remainder of their sentence, right? In a nursing home or the facility. Okay. So, and of course,
Keep in mind, Bruce, that this expanded home confinement program is for low-risk offenders. And it brings me to the questions that we have been posed here recently and folks calling us and everything on, we want to see if we could get First Step back for my loved one who is in a contract prison, a private prison, one of those contract sites that the Bureau of Prison contracts with. So, unfortunately, this does not apply to individuals that are non-U.S. citizens, foreign-born citizens. So, just keep that in mind. And it's also for low-risk offenders. Before Bruce, the Bureau was statutorily limited to the shorter of the 10% of 6 months for 6 months to place an inmate under the home confinement. That was the authority the Bureau had. Remember that, Bruce?
Yes.
So now that's why the home confinement is an expanded program now, because the Bureau, under Section 602 of the First Step Act, modified Title 18 U.S.C. 3621C1, which gives authority to the Bureau to maximize the amount of time spent on home confinement whenever possible for low risk offenders. So, go ahead, Bruce.
You're right.
I just wanted to clarify that because we have gotten many questions on that.
And we'll continue to get many questions, and again, even the expanded home detention. So like I just said moments ago, the person's usually 60 or older or is terminally ill. However, if the person had a crime of violence, or a sex offender, they're not eligible anyway. Okay. And that's a shame, but because there were people when they were young, they might've committed their crime when they were young, or they might've, you know, been just a downloader of child pornography or child abuse images. I shouldn't say just, I mean, that's a bad thing, but that's a sex crime nonetheless. It's a sex offense. And these folks, as it stands now, will not be eligible for this program. So, you know, you would think that somebody who is terminally ill wouldn't be a threat, but that's not how this is going to read. You know what I mean?
Right. But I know what you mean, just Bruce, in regard to that type of offender. It's a non-contact, low-risk offender versus one that has contact. Abused or molested children. Right. You know, that's the difference we want to point to.
Or a Larry Nassar who had contact and abused adult. That contact, yeah.
Yes.
Yep. So that these are interesting, you know. That one, you know, which kind of they dovetailed with the, you know, Second Chance Act for the expanded home detention. That one, that's good. You know, that's good that they're going to get that out there, and there'll be some people that qualify for that. Make no mistake about it. But this is another interesting thing. Just because you qualify doesn't mean you got something coming, right? You're going to need somebody to help you, probably. Right. Put together the paperwork, put together the argument, put together the administrative remedy requests, right, to be considered under the First Step Act, et cetera, et cetera. And sometimes it takes that, it takes the inmate to advocate for themselves to get these benefits. Jose, just because the person qualifies doesn't mean they're going to get something coming.
Right. Right. And, you know, the language that the statute, the First Step Act, gives and refers to, the Bureau looks at it as to refer those inmates that have the lower risk of reoffending in the community and the reentry needs could be met, not in an RRC, but in home confinement, in electronic detention. You see what I'm saying? In electronic monitoring versus a traditional placement in a residential reentry center. So those are the inmates that the Bureau is targeting for the expanded home detention program. The inmates that really do not need to be in a halfway house or RRC called release reentry center.
Right. Right. I'm looking at a modified judgment and commitment here, Jose, that you and I were allowed to see recently on an individual, and you know, is very interesting to see how, you know, right here on the judgment commitment, the court recommends the Bureau of Prisons that the defendant serve the final XX months of the sentence in home confinement, and just amended, you know, just amended the sentencing.
Yes, and actually, it's interesting that case that we discussed, Bruce, because it was previous to the First Step Act,
right?
And the sentencing judge recognizes that the Bureau was statutorily limited to the requirements of the law, where it says 10% or 6 months or less, wherever it's shorter, and so she makes the recommendation that the Bureau gives that percentage. Last percent, it was a year, I thought it was, right?
Bruce? Yeah, it was a year.
Step Act. Yeah, under the home confinement program. So that judge was proactive.
Boy, Joe's very proactive. Remember, the Second Chance Act was in effect. You see what I'm saying?
Right.
Not that it makes a difference, but the Second Chance Act was in effect during this time. And I think there was some wiggle room underneath the Second Chance Act, which is a little known thing. That many of our clients qualify for right now. You know what I mean? That they can get extended halfway house placements, more than they would have gotten otherwise, by accessing some of the language of the Second Chance Act placed in a form of an administrative request. And then usually resulting in a little bit more RRC placement. So I think that's really good. But so, man, any pending Yeah, and then just underlying indictments, any pending, dismissed on the motion of the United States. Well, that judge cleared the deck, you know what I mean? Cleared the deck.
Yes.
And, man, not every judge is like this, folks, and I know we get a lot of calls about how bad people's judges are, but, wow, this judge was really on top of their game, and
I think it was a combination of the legal team requesting that and also the judge being amenable to, recognizing that they could recommend and not dictate to the Bureau of Prisons what the Bureau of Prisons chooses as a place of confinement.
But guess who had the final say on that matter? I think it wasn't it the warden of the institution. You knew the gentleman there. Was that the final say, or was that the central office or headquarters that you think had the final
say? The warden initiates it. The warden initiates the referral to the RRC. And so under this circumstances, the warden was the one that moved the first step. No pun intended. He took the first step and refer the inmate to the RRM's office, the residential reentry manager's office, for approval. So.
Okay. So this is an interesting point, how this is a very, but this individual who ended up getting released had an administrative thing at the eight level, at the BP eight level, asking, right? Because the person had to exhaust certain things on the administrative
remedy.
Somebody had, right, again, somebody had to assist to that individual, you know, with the language of the BP-8, and then, right, that was exhausted, and then it was able to engage, right, regional and whatever, and then the attorney was active, and you know, and everybody was active in communicating with the judge and all this and that. So it was a complete coordination of the courts, the BOP, and regional, you know, obviously regional BOP to obtain a placement for this individual.
Correct.
So I think that's really cool, but boy, it is government. You know what I mean? It's government to the core, because it's going to require a lot of tracking, you know?
Yes.
I was looking at the voluminous amount of paperwork just on this move. It's quite a deal. So anyway,
that was interesting case there, Bruce.
Yep. Title 18, 3624 C1 for our listeners. So, and then other things in 18 USC 3624 C2, and again how they were able to utilize, you know, the home confinement. And right, in the name of adjustment to the community and those things. So yeah, I mean, what an exciting time. I just don't know how the BOP is gonna have the time to. I mean, can you imagine being an exec or a public information officer, or whatever, or unit? I mean, all the requests. You know what I mean? All the paper.
It's busy times in the Bureau of Prisons, Bruce, as we know it, and people call it all the time because they can't keep up. But actually, you know, the Bureau is being very proactive. They're working on it. I think the impact is more as to the residential reentry manager's office, the community corrections office, and the program staff there, which have been limited. Also, the residential reentry centers, Bruce, because you know, in the past they shut down quite a few of those centers because of budgetary constraints. So I know last year they closed out between 20 or 30 of them. So really the impact is going to be more at that level. The volume, I just got a call from one of our clients that the Middle District of North Carolina has not process one case under the First Step Act yet, while other districts in North Carolina have. So, I mean, I think the volume is at the RRM's office. The Bureau of Prison is doing their revision and submitted them already for elderly offenders and for terminally ill offenders. They have been proactive. So,
yeah, they're like you said, they're doing what they can, and but sometimes it takes help with consultants like us to help get that, you know, get the person's request to be known. Oftentimes people make requests to the wrong people and it dies on the vine. They, you know, they miss a deadline and it dies on the vine, or, you know, it's, there's a lot of things that can go wrong. And, you know, people say, oh, well, the BOP makes their own rules. And that's just not true. They actually follow the rules. And what happens is if the request doesn't go follow within the rules, you have to do it again or it gets dismissed and what have you. And so, again, having that assistance is crucial, you know.
Absolutely, Bruce. It having our assistance to get the right language, the accurate information to in order to navigate the whole bureaucracy, you know, not only with Bureau, but with the RRM's office, as I indicated, because, you know, this time is about the essence, especially if you have an elderly offender or you have a reduction in sentence under a compassionate release. Time is of the essence because these individuals need to move and process. And it's a lot of paperwork and a lot of things that you have to do. And having our assistance, an assistant from a qualified individual, federal prison authorities, like Bruce or myself, it's vital because we already dealt with this. We already know it. Mm-hmm. And the Bureau is a policy-driven agency, and they're going to follow the policy. And a lot of the folks don't know the policy.
Right.
And even the policy and the practice is different because this is new practice under the First Step Act. So
on that case we were talking about, the person, you know, the person had an attorney, and then the attorney, I think, approached the judge, and then the judge said that the inmate needed to exhaust the administrative remedies before approaching the judge with the issue. So that's
correct.
You know what I mean? So then that had to be addressed first, right? Before then the judge could would be willing to get involved. And I can assure you that would be the case with virtually all the judges. You know what I mean? They're not in the business of telling the BOP what to do because they're not in the same branch as the BOP. They're in a different government branch, right? They're in the judicial branch, and the BOP is in another branch, in the executive branch. So, you know, they really can do certain things, but they have to walk a chalk line with the BOP and work cooperatively, right, and nicely and respectfully so we can all coordinate our efforts.
Yes. Definitely.
What would we do with 210 days? Was the 210 days the day from the city of the office? Do you remember that there's some sort of work? I was reading another issue where the inmate didn't want to have to wait 210 days to be released and get it sooner. I don't know if you know anything about the 210 days. Is that the time that the
That's the time that the First Step Act gave the BOP 210 days to implement the requirements of the First Step Act and to come up with the tool, the risk assessment tool, to evaluate inmates under.
Okay. So, yeah, looking through the First Step Act, you know, there's just a lot of other interesting things about it, talking about placement of prisoners close to families. And while the BOP, you know, would like to do that, sometimes that's the case, right, Jose? Because there could be institutional crowding. Also, just program space, you know. I mean, you and I worked a case where the gentleman was a sex offender and went up north to take his offender treatment, I believe in Ohio. Is that right? And then the gentleman had to ride us all the way back down to a southern state to go to his RRC placement. So
yeah.
That's an example of a guy who's, you know, not close to home, but I think made the right decision to finish the program and to get the most residential reentry centers possible, and then took a very, very long multiple-day bus trip back to his release destination. What are your thoughts on that?
And that happens. That's a common occurrence right now, Bruce, because the Bureau is trying to implement the First Step Act. But keep in mind that the Residential Drug Abuse Program participation keeps on going. Inmates are still going and doing the Residential Drug Abuse Program, which has a benefit of reducing the sentence up to a year. So they're trying to shuffle their population to meet with the expectations of the programs and not impact inmate releases in the future. So that's what happens. We have a couple of inmates now waiting on placement for a Residential Drug Abuse Program who are going to be misplaced from their release district, but further away to take the program because the program is not available where they're going to be releasing to. So they're going to further away than to bring them back to their release district. And that's a common occurrence. That happens a lot. So the Bureau has a lot on their plate right now, trying to manage the population consistent with all the programming needs and reentry needs of the inmate. And the First Step Act has a big impact on where inmates are placed, no doubt.
Did you want? I know we're going to do a video on First Step Act. But did you want to talk about the relocation aspect and what you'd say on that video?
Well, like I mentioned, Bruce, you know, people have to keep in mind that either under the First Step Act for the expanded home detention program or for the reduction in sentence under the elderly offender or terminally ill offender, there has to be a release plan approved and reviewed and verified by the probation office, by the family of the inmate, by everybody. You know, so if the inmate is going to a jurisdiction different from where he was sentenced and he has supervision on the sentencing district, there has to be an approval of relocation of supervision. So that has to be done first before the release plan. Or you want to do it in conjunction with your release plan, you have to submit a relocation of supervision, which takes time to verify, and then verify the release plan also. So it's two things. Many offenders that were sentenced after November 1, 1987 will have a term of supervision to follow. So if they're going to a jurisdiction different from the sentencing jurisdiction, they will have to have an approval of relocation and supervision.
Right. And man, can you imagine doing all this work and then forgetting about getting approval from United States probation on the back end? Because if they don't want you, you're not going, you know, if they can't. Yeah.
They just will deny the release plan. They'll deny it out.
Yeah.
Flat. That will be a quick response of a denial of the release plan, because supervision, relocation of supervision, has to be pursued first.
Right, right. And they're going to double check. So for a lot of the offenders that, you know, say that this lady's their wife and they're going to live with them, or they say this girlfriend, they're going to live with them, or this family member, and if that doesn't check out, you know what I mean? You better be 100% sure on your release plan and that they're waiting for you with open arms. The people are, so that then federal probation can do that check and verify with them that they indeed want you or want the offender living with them. I've dealt with quite a few where that wasn't the case. You know what I mean? And when push came to shove and it got for real, they're like, oh, no, I've just been saying this to him while he's doing his time, not to upset him, this and that. Like, oh, my goodness. You know, so it's that's not a good thing. So.
Right.
So anyway, that's a great,
you know, people.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
I think people that are not in our line of business, Bruce, would not understand the importance of approval of a release plan, you know, with all type of either halfway house placement or home confinement placement. the home where the individual is going to be releasing to, or where they're going to be living at, she or he, after they come out of the halfway house or incarceration, she or he have to have a release plan approved by the probation office, because the home has to be found to be appropriate under the provisions of the home confinement or the program statement on home confinement that the Bureau just, under the operations memorandum, if you will, and the program statement on home confinement. So the conditions of the home have to be appropriate.
They absolutely do. Particularly if you're, it makes sense, right? Particularly if you're looking for home detention or home confinement, the home has to be appropriate. The home has to meet certain standards. The home, you have to be, if there's some sort of a monitoring bracelet or other mode of detection that the person needs to be able to wear and participate in, it needs to be able to do all that. So, that's a good point. Got a call last night from an individual just, hey, my loved one has a life sentence. How can they benefit from the First Step Act? The answer is they really can't, it was a crime of violence. They have a life sentence. They don't have a release date. I told the person, look, I would, they were going to score down from a penitentiary to a medium, which is good. You always want that. I think the person had been in close to 20 years and hadn't even made a medium yet. So that kind of tells me something, right? It's a crime of violence, right? Or they got some incident reports, or a gang affiliation or something like this. So you want to talk about gangs a little bit? Because that's going to knock somebody off, right?
If they're affiliated with a gang, you have to keep in mind that under the First Step Act, it's for low-risk offenders. So individuals that are in gangs might tend to have a higher risk unless they have de-ganged or denounced the gang or have been dropped out of the gang and they're validated as dropouts or that have denounced their gang and not anymore doing the life of the gang affiliation. So the institution, actually the agency as a whole, has a lot of flexibility and discretion on determining the risk. And that's where the inmate's profile at the institution, if he has been doing meaningful programs, completing meaningful programs inside, not participating in gang-affiliated activities inside the prison walls or even outside, communicating with gang associates or being a gang member, So it would be hard for individuals that have gang affiliation or ties to gangs or continue to living within the life of street gangs to get any benefit under the First Step Act. Only those that are statutorily given, like the good conduct time of the 54 days per year and a day served, Other than that, if I was still a Bureau of Prisons official evaluating an individual that's being submitted to me for benefits under the First Step Act, I would not consider any gang members because they pose a risk to the safety of the public and the community.
Okay.
And that's the angle that institution staff are going to take in evaluating those kind of offenders.
Even if they deregistered or in a dropout yard or whatever, they could still get jammed up because of their history.
If there is a process within the Bureau of Prisons to declassify or to validate and debrief individuals that don't want to be affiliated with gangs anymore. There is a sincerity process, and it's validated through Bureau of Prisons, the Office of Intelligence. And the Bureau of Prisons has a process for that. And they're validated as dropouts or have de-ganged as they call it, and then they could possibly have a chance if they have been certified as validated dropouts.
Wow. Okay. Okay.
Another of the questions, Bruce, you remember they've been calling us, you know, the non-U.S. citizens, the individuals that might be deported by the Immigration and Customs Enforcement. My take on the individuals that are non-U.S. citizens that are in private facilities who are going to be reviewed to be deported or not. The important thing is to get through that process first, to get through the process of to determine if they're going to be deported or not. And if they're not going to be deported, then they could certainly benefit from the First Step Act and its provisions. So it would be wise for individuals to have their review expedited, those non-U.S. citizens to be expedited.
So in other words, get through that hearing process first and get to the outcome of the deportation. If you're not going to be deported, then you may be eligible for some. Okay. And that is very important, you know, because a lot of times people that aren't U.S. citizens, you know, aren't, you know, eligible for anything. But if they don't, like you said, if they don't do the deportation, then they're going to be citizens.
Correct. Right. Right. So if ICE determines that they're not going to be deported, then they could certainly qualify for the benefits of the First Step Act.
Right. Right. So that is interesting stuff. How are we doing there? What time? Got about 4 minutes. I was actually reading part of the Second Chance Act here. It talks about, you know, the inmate upon request from his attorney or partner or family member ensure the Bureau of Prisons employees assist the defendant in the preparation, drafting, and submission of a request for sentence reduction pursuant not later than 14 days of receipt of the request. That they need to take action. So wow, they're actually calling for BOP staff to help inmates with the request.
Yes.
That's interesting, isn't it?
It is very interesting.
Excuse me, officer, can you help me bust out this time cut under 3624 C1A, sir, ma'am. So let's see. Yeah, that's a you know, accept and process a request for sentence reduction that has been prepared and submitted on the defendant's behalf by defense attorney, partner, family member, and upon request of the defendant or family member, ensure the BOP assist in preparation, drafting, and submission of a request for sentence pursuant to C1A, and ensure that all Bureau of Prisons facilities regularly visibly post, including handbooks, training materials, law libraries, medical and hospice facilities, make available to prisoners upon demand. You know,
in that scenario that you're presenting, Bruce, you know, that's where we fill that void, you know, to help.
Absolutely.
People, not to just, you know, where we could assist in and do the proper procedures and contact the proper folks, and the appropriate language is included in those referrals. We could help the families, help the inmate, you know, and file the appropriate paperwork to be considered under the First Step Act. Because it's a lot of, especially if under the reduction in sentence and compassionate release and the elderly offender, it's a lot of requirements that go into it.
Right. And the window between now and 2023 seems like a bigger window, because that pilot program on that backside program could, you know, in 2024 go away, right? Prison population could go down a bit by then. Certainly it will, with the passage of the good conduct time from 47 to 54, and then all this stuff kicking in, all the low risk inmates defined by the Hudson survey or whatever, right? And then
right.
And, you know, shoot.
Well, the way I see it, the way I see it, Bruce, is that the pilot should be done then. Then the standard procedure should be implemented after that, you know, because right. the law is going to be the law. And then you might have the Second Step Act instead of the First Step Act, the continuum of this law, right. because this is just the first step going in the right direction.
Right.
There's more to come.
There's more to come.
After 2023, the pilot finishes, right. and then the standard procedures are in place.
Exactly. Well, look, man, that's a wrap. We got 1 minute left, so man, we could talk about this hour after hour after hour. And folks are probably going to do some live streaming on Facebook and live streaming on YouTube. And Jose and I are available to answer questions. And just an exciting time in Federal Bureau of Prison history. We loved working for the agency. We're just so blessed. I'm speaking for you, Jose, but I think we're blessed to be able to carry on with the vast knowledge that we have about policies and procedures in the system to be able to do this to assist people. You know, if you got something coming, you know, you might get it, and it takes a village to get it. You know what I'm saying? It's just not out of a sense of entitlement. You got to work to get it, and we can certainly help you work to that end. So, well, Jose, thanks Absolutely. For coming on the show today, man. Thank you so much for coming on the show, and folks can go to federalprisonauthority.com and see what me and Jose do. We have a YouTube channel called The First Step Act. First Step Act. So check that out. We also have a First Step Act prison reform page on Facebook that is really taken off. What a great community that is of inmate families as well as DOJ officials. The DOJ officials are usually very quiet on the page. It's just me and the family going at it, but that's okay. It is what it is. You know, I haven't been wrong yet. I haven't said, hey, you know, Bruce, you were wrong about this and that, but I'm sure I'm going to make a mistake here at some point. But anyway, so Jose, thanks for being on the show.
Bruce, you're welcome, Bruce. Thank you for having me. And if you have any questions, please feel free to give us a call. As Bruce said, we're very fortunate to have a career in the Bureau of Prisons, past career, and now we offer our services to assist individuals and serve them in the right way.
Excellent. And our email is federalprisonauthorityBOP@gmail.com. And go to those other federalprisonauthority.com and our First Step Act prison reform page on Facebook. And folks, we'll see you here next week on the Concierge Coaches Show on LA Talk Radio. See us on iTunes. This show will be on iTunes as well as archived on the show site. So until next week, we'll see y'all next time here on the Concierge Coaches Show on LA Talk Radio. Have a blessed week.
You're listening to the Concierge Coaches Show with Bruce Cameron and Justin Nimmergood, only on LA Talk Radio.